NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
The Flight Safety Detectives is bringing on a new sponsor, Piston Powered, a power-by-the-hour program for owners of piston-powered aircraft that can stabilize the long-term cost of owning your airplane.
Well, good morning, Todd. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing just fine. We're here to talk about a request from one of our viewers. And the request was that we look at the crash in 1985 on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 1985, that killed the singer Ricky Nelson. For those of you who are of a certain age, you might remember Ricky Nelson from Ozzy and Harriet, where he was one of the family members in a family kind of show that was starring his parents. If you're a little bit younger, like myself, you'll remember him from some of his later work as a rock star. We bring you forward to the latter part of his life, where he's in his private DC-3, an aircraft that was operated by Ricky Nelson, and where there were 7 passengers, including Ricky, and 2 crew members. And somewhere during the flight, there were some issues. The flight crew was trying to start the cabin heater, and they had issues starting that heater. And at some point during the flight, there was smoke and fire in the cabin. The smoke got so heavy that the crew decided to make an emergency landing in a field in Texas on their way to Dallas. They were flying from Alabama. And they hit a utility pole and a wire and crashed and burn. 2 crew members, as I said, were able to escape. The 7 passengers were not. Fast forwarding to the investigation. Early in the investigation, there were reports, not in the accident report, but in media reports, that the NTSB had found drugs in the system of the passengers. And that started rumors, which I remember hearing back in the 80s, that somehow or another, Ricky Nelson and his bandmates were out there, smoking whatever they were smoking, freebasing, and that started the fire. There's no definitive evidence that that was the case, nor was there definitive evidence that the cabin heater was the cause, but that is the preponderance of the evidence.
I remember this well, actually, and I actually have even a little closer relationship to it, I think. Never checked this out, but in part of my career, I actually was working on the charter side of the business. One of the pilots that worked for this outfit that came into the Boston area often, he was different. He wore a Nomex flight suit all the time when he was flying. Supposedly, I was told that he was the co-pilot on this airplane, and that one of the reasons why he survived was because of that Nomex flight suit that he wore. I don't know if that's true. He did have some burns. His hands were a bit deformed, and he has some scarring on the back of his neck. He always wore his hair a little bit longer in the back, if I remember right. And I never would raise the issue with him. I never talked about it. This kind of aircraft was common for entertainers to have. Apparently, he leased the airplane himself. He used it for touring. Now, we know that he was touring in Alabama someplace and then had to get over to Texas, so that's a 5 or 6 hour ride in a DC-3, which is low and slow, not pressurized. and they use those onboard heaters for temperature. And I actually have worked on some of those, and I never liked those heaters. Never liked them. They were gasoline fired. So inside the airplane, you have a gasoline powered fire inside a metal tube, essentially, to heat up the air in the cabin. I absolutely despised those things. There was a couple, three different manufacturers of them, and the reliability always left something to be desired.
Now, a
It's
little bit, very little bit of background about this plane. As many of you who are fans of aviation know, DC-3 was one of the most famous aircraft ever made. Literally thousands of them were produced from the 30s through certainly through World War II, and it was used extensively in World War II in all theaters of operation. It was designated the C-47 in the military. And this is a kind of aircraft that is a retractable gear, tailwheel aircraft. It could operate out of rough airstrips all over the world. And me personally, when I was in Honduras as a kid, we did a flight from the mainland to an island nearby, and we had a flight in a DC-3. And half of it had passengers, the other half had cargo in it. But and it was an interesting flight on a gravel runway, which was looking way too short, even for my teenaged eyes. But we were able to land and take off rather easily in fairly rough airports there in Central America.
very versatile aircraft. I too have flown a lot of on these airplanes. When I was a kid, I'd flown on them, and even as an adult, we had them flying around in New England, and Cape and the Islands had the airplanes. A number of carriers had them flying all over New England on those routes where you'd only have a few people, essentially a service, essentially today. So they were a backbone of the airline fleet for decades. They were quite an airplane. They built a lot of them, but they also had a lot of accidents with them. Military, had them for supply planes all over the world. They were the backbone of our war effort in the Pacific. In fact, they probably single-handedly saved China from the Japanese flying the Hump, flying supplies over that were able to help the Chinese hold off the Japanese from conquering the entire country at that time. So that the airplane has proven to be a pretty reliable but unforgiving airplane.
The NTSB did an investigation of this particular aircraft. The date that stuck out to me, the date and type of last inspection, unknown. Now, I don't know if that's because the documentation for the aircraft got burned up, or that the operator or the registered owner of the aircraft, the operator was Ricky Nelson, the registered owner was another company, whether they were somewhat slipshod in keeping documentation. But a plane like that can obviously fly for decades because, both of us flew them. Within the last 30, 40 years. But if you don't maintain the aircraft or don't maintain it well, many things can happen that aren't good. Now, to this specific flight, the analysis of the flight by the NTSB was basically one paragraph. And essentially, this report is one paragraph, so we don't have much to go on, but it is somewhat instructive. They were cruising at 18,000 feet, excuse me, 6,000 feet, at about 5:09 in the afternoon on December 31st. Pilot advised ATC that they'd like to turn around back to Texarkana. Texarkana is in the far northeastern corner of Texas, right up next to Arkansas. 2 minutes later, the pilot reported to ATC that he would be unable to make it to any airport that they were trying to divert to. There was smoke in the cockpit, and he was going to land in the field. The landing happened about 3 minutes later, that's at 5:14 in the afternoon. The aircraft hit wires in a pole, broke up and caught fire. Now, we looked up the sunset time in Dallas, which is about 150, 200 miles away from there. At that point in time, sunset was about 5:30 in the afternoon. It would have been a few minutes earlier where this aircraft crashed. So, in essence, this aircraft crashed very late in the day. Sun was very low on the horizon, about 10 to 15 minutes before sunset. There's smoke in the cabin. There is an apparent fire on the aircraft. And the crew was highly motivated to put the aircraft on the ground before they lost control of it, in my opinion.
not a good place to be.
And by the way, this was operating as Part 91, which as a general aviation aircraft, which has far fewer requirements, even in 1985, than an unscheduled commuter or unscheduled airline aircraft would have. So, with respect to time that the experience that the pilots had, the captain had about 5,700 hours of experience. There was a co-pilot. There's no indication in the report of how many or how few hours the co-pilot had. They did also note that the emergency procedures were not followed by the pilot in command, and the checklist was not used. So, unfortunately, we only had this one paragraph analysis. I'm sure if there was a public docket here, there would be much more detail behind that. But we have a series of factors here. Not the first time we've seen this with a celebrity accident. There's a celebrity who is taking private transportation from point A to point B, and the operator or the pilot is less than fully up to speed when it comes to procedures, training, certification. Not in this case, but in some of the other cases we looked at. For example, we looked at the crash of Aaliyah, the singer Aaliyah from, I believe it was 2001. And that was a case where the single pilot was not qualified to fly that aircraft. And the aircraft was flying without proper authorization from the government of the Bahamas. So there were corners being cut there. There's no indication that major corners are being cut here, but there are indications that this was not a top of the line set of procedures and maintenance on this aircraft, in my opinion.
It's interesting to note that in this realm of chartered aircraft entertainers, how many of them get airplanes that the charter because they're cheap and they're essentially they're well used. Some might actually say they're pieces of the junk, but I've seen it over and over. I recall in my past visiting Tucson, Arizona, where there was an operator there that had some Viscount airplanes, which were British built, four engine Rolls-Royce airplanes, probably late 1940s technology in these airplanes. And he was chattering them out to people. Ray Charles was one of his customers, and I believe that airplane crashed with him on it. We have seen this over and over. Political people, candidates running across the larger states in this country need air transportation, but they seem to always end up with the less than perfect or ideal company flying them around. Both, so it's both political figures and entertainers that end up with people that are on the edge. There was rumors of running around years ago, and I don't know how true they are. And it's probably like everything else, is probably an element of truth in it. That a lot of these charter companies gave kickbacks to the entertainers, managers, brokers in order to get the business. There was a big scandal about that years ago, if I recall right. But in any event, they end up with these less than stellar performing charter companies to haul around some of our favorite entertainers and would-be political figures, which defies description. Both Greg and I have done a number of assessments of equipment and companies to do charter for high-value individuals. And we go out and make sure that the companies that they want to buy their services from for chartering airplanes do, in fact, use state-of-the-art or the current standard of procedures, not the minimum procedures that the FAA gives, because the federal air regulations are minimum procedures, but there are procedures in use every single day by companies that far exceed the minimum standards that the FAA does. And that's where those are the airplanes you want to be on. Those are the ones that you want to have no trouble with. In fact, yesterday I was delayed some time in the morning because of a captain and a circuit breaker. And my seatmate was complaining. And I said, all I did was say to him, no, that's what I want. I want the captain, if he's not sure about something, let's just sit here until we figure out if it's something that we can go with or something that we need to sit in till they get it fixed. And he was quiet after that.
And before
But
I forget, I was looking on the internet after you mentioned Ray Charles, and your memory is correct. In October of 1985, less than 3 months before the Ricky Nelson accident, Ray Charles was in a Viscount that slid off the runway and he wasn't injured. Those of you who are watching the video version of this will see that report flashing up on the screen, and we'll have that available for download as well.
And we ought to take a look at that one and see what the circumstances were that at one future date. But that's another example where we have these airplanes. And it comes right up to today. You know, Vice President Pence slid off the runway in LaGuardia with two pilots that had never flown into LaGuardia in the winter. Vet your operation. If you're somebody that's going to be chartering an airplane, you need to make sure that it's not just the first taxi that comes up that you're going to grab. You want to make sure that you do a little work, do your homework, and have a reliable company with a reliable track record and one that has a pretty stable workforce. Back to Ricky Nelson here. The rumors that were flying around about what went on in the airplane at the time of the accident were pretty damning about the freebasing of drugs in the back. One of the problems with having a heater of the type that they had on this airplane is we probably will never know. Who knew if it was a lot of gasoline vapors inside the cabin when they were freebasing? Because those damn heaters, they were notorious for problems.
And this is also the commentary on the power of media circa 1985, which was years before the internet was around. And the fact that this rose to the level of major mainstream media, that is, I heard about this in the newspapers and radio and whatnot, and it sort of stuck in a lot of people's minds, myself included, because at the time it would have been very difficult for the average person, even for people inside the business, to have gotten their hands on the official NTSB report, which in this case came out, I believe, about 18 months after the event. And so that was the lingering picture that was in my head that, oh yeah, Ricky Nelson was involved in, doing something in the back. It wasn't until much later that I saw it differently. Fast forward to today, you have a celebrity of that type who might not be at the top of their level of celebrity, but is still well known, getting involved in something like this. There'll be a lot more information immediately. A lot of it will be junk. A lot of it will be rumor and innuendo. But there'll be a massive amount of stuff out there fairly quickly. And I don't think that a false accusation of, let's say, they were doing drugs on the aircraft would stand the test of time because fairly quickly, other information would come to the forefront. And if it were in the US, the NTSB would be front and center giving press conferences, some of them available on YouTube, uncut, if you want to see the full meal deal. So there would not be a lack of information about the details of what's going on, at least early on in the investigation.
Well, it's a tragedy. I remember when he died, and I used to love his music. So that really is a tragedy. But we've lost so many of them. I mean, in the 50s and 60s, and even like we said, just up to recently when we did the one in the Bahamas.
Jenny Rivera also in Mexico.
Hey, and even Jimmy Buffett, he almost
Yeah.
got shot out of the sky in the Bahamas. Them thinking he was a drug runner. So we out of this. I don't think there's a report about that, but they actually shot at him. There's a lot of backstories, I'm sure, about some of those other adventures and like Jimmy Buffett's. But the point is that they have these people of substance or notoriety, and they end up choosing a method of transportation that really they shouldn't. They really should choose their operators much better. And he was the operator. So what kind of standards did he have? Was he the operator because he wanted to have parties in the back of his airplane? That's another issue that could be discussed. You know, if he had a good operator of an airplane, they would probably raise holy heck with him if they found out that he was doing something illegally in the back of the airplane and maybe not even take his business anymore. We've seen that. I've seen that with the some of the charters in the recent past taking high profile people out of the LA area and having them do some stupid things. I want them to do some stupid things with the airplane. And the people that own the airplane told them they wouldn't fly them anymore. It's a whole area of aviation that sort of everybody ignores. They just leave it alone, but it is risky. It is risky. And it's a shame to lose this talent. Well, we talked this to death, and there isn't a lot to talk about, except it looks like either poor pick of a type of equipment or poor conduct on the part of the people owning and operating the airplane that ended up in a disaster for all their families. It is a tragedy, no question. Nope, Todd, any final words on this one?
Well, my final word is basically, why do we pick shows like this? Because we've proven to ourselves over and over again, both in this podcast and things I've done over the years, celebrity events are popular. And popularity aside, that attracts an audience that may not look at these kinds of shows on a regular basis. And when we have that opportunity, we do our best to put some insight and some education into it so that maybe when they're in a position to make a decision, either as a passenger or as an operator or as an owner, they'll think twice about doing things that seem to be just outside of the regulations.
And as usual, I'll give my standard sermon at the end. Too many airplanes, too many accidents have the origins in poor pre-flights. And that could be here with this airplane. It's wintertime. They knew it was cold weather. They're going to be flying the late afternoon into the evening. Did they have trouble before they left the ground with that heater in the back? I wouldn't be surprised if they did. And if they did, why did they take the chance and leave with it? Because they had to be there. Time pressure pushing them. In any event, if you're going to go flying today, do a good pre-flight on your airplane. Plan your route accordingly. Make sure the weather between where you are and where you're going is also good, not just where you're going. When you get in the air, put your head on a swivel. We still have a lot of young pilots or new pilots out there. You want to make sure you maintain your knowledge about where they are and what they're up to. And please, please fly safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.